Senators and cabinet secretaries, lobbyists and policy directors, for generations, many of our nation's powerful and political got their starts working long hours in the bowels of Washington, D.C. offices, or in state capitals, or on campaign trails, doing thankless work, out of the limelight, and often, usually in fact, for no pay. But the world of the political internship is changing. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman, and this is KCUR Central Standard, where today we're looking at the impact of a recent trend toward actually paying the usually young people who in many ways keep the wheels of law and politics spinning. Guillermo Creamer Jr. is a former congressional intern, and he's joining us today from Boston by Skype. Good morning, Guillermo.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for spending time with us. And we will talk about your current work in a minute, but let's start at the beginning. How did you first learn about the opportunity to be an intern in D.C.?
Gosh, okay. So I attended university in Washington. And, you know, one of the things that you want to do while you're there is really get your foot in the door.
Right.
And getting your foot in the door just means, you know, applying to internships and finding that opportunity that's going to scoop you up and hopefully put you on that trajectory into political life.
Because that's part of what an internship in Washington especially is about, right? It's the first step toward something that will build to something else down the road.
No, absolutely. It's the entry point to the political pipeline.
So who did you intern for?
So I interned for a congressman from Nevada, Stephen Horsford. He's actually back in the House. He was gone for a term and now he's back. But I was an unpaid intern for Congressman Horsford.
And as an unpaid intern in Congress, what did you do actually? What was your daily work for the office?
You know, so the reality is that it really is up to every office. There is no one streamline internship program. So it really depends on the office in that case. I was actually at the front desk. You know, I was the first person that individuals were greeted by when they walked into the office. I also helped out with the administration part. You know, I did anything from sorting the mail to answering constituent phone calls, but also shadowing individuals who worked in the office. So I very much was not fetching coffee. You know, I was not just putting together mail, but doing more than just that.
So not super glamorous, but still felt like it had some significance or some meaning.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Especially when you're answering constituent phone calls, you know, the first thing that you recognize is the fact that they're talking to you first before they talk to anyone else. And so it really, it's really interesting to have that feeling.
And how typical was your experience? I mean, I think a lot of people probably don't realize just how many interns there are on Capitol Hill and really throughout the government.
Yeah, there are thousands of interns, especially on Capitol Hill. You know, you're talking, especially in the summer right now, D.C. is flooded with interns. You know, if America runs on Duncan, you know, D.C. runs on interns. Like, that's just the way it is.
Did you actually enjoy it?
You know, I did. It very much shaped the way I saw the life of being a public servant. I think it's one of those things that you really appreciate over time. And you also recognize the importance of it. You know, you're walking throughout the hallways of where some of the most powerful people, not just in the country, but in the world sit. And so having that opportunity and being amongst all of them is really breathtaking.
Now, how many hours a day or a week were you spending doing this?
So, in, you know, normal internships are regular hours. You know, in most cases, you're talking about 9 to 6. In my case, I was doing 3 times a week. The average summer intern, however, is doing 5 times a week. And so, you know, you're talking about a full-time experience that has gone unpaid.
Yeah, so you were unpaid. I mean, you were doing it 3 days a week. Why did it matter whether you were paid or not? How did that impact your life?
So I come from a hardworking middle-class family. You know, both of my parents are immigrants from South America, and I attended university on pretty heavy financial aid. And so the concept that I had to figure out the financial means to afford this unpaid experience put me at a disadvantage from my richer counterparts. You know, I had peers on the Hill who were driving themselves to work. And, you know, and they were just parking their cars in $300 a month lots, and they were eating in the cafeteria every day. And, you know, you don't really understand the struggle until you're in it yourself. You know, I mean, I recall I only had one suit at the time, you know, and suits aren't cheap. And I'm, you know, interning in Washington. It's not that, you know, it's not that cool in Washington all the time. It gets really hot. And so, you know, you recognize these expenses on top of just living expenses. You recognize the other expenses that come with interning. And you realize that the price tag to intern is actually pretty high. And so, you know, you're paying your dues, as some say, in order to really get your foot in the door. But if, you know, that door is at such a high cost, then is it truly equitable? That's the question that I started asking myself.
And so you started asking yourself this question, and the questioning led to some action. You, rather than assisting other politicians, you started doing a little political work of your own. Tell us about the beginnings of Pay Our Interns.
Yeah, absolutely. So I met my counterpart, Carlos Vera, at university, and the both of us shared our internship experiences. You know, we recognized the struggle that we both had, but we also recognized that we weren't the only ones. So we launched a social media campaign strictly on Facebook and then on Twitter, you know, and we wanted to kind of get the message out there. Unpaid internships were wrong. You know, they were a systemic barrier. They created disadvantages. And very quickly, we realized this was more than just a social media campaign. This was an advocacy effort. And so we moved forward, and that's what we did. You know, we started to become advocates, and we realized, you know, we filed for our 501c3, and we were like, okay, let's do this. And so, you know, in 2.5 years, so we launched in October of 2016, I'd like to say we're relatively successful. You know, we did the research and we went to every single house office, found out who paid, who didn't, published that information, you know, and then on top of that, we started working with legislators. And last year, you know, we were able to pass almost $14 million in allocations just to get interns paid.
Yeah. Before that happened, when you did this research initially to find out who paid and who didn't, what did you find? I mean, how before people started really talking about this the way you've been talking about it, how many interns were paid?
You know, the numbers were abysmal. And the other thing, too, is we recognized that there was a party divide. The Republicans were paying their interns, you know, a lot more than the Democrats were.
Interesting. Why do you think that is?
You know, we're not 100% sure. You know, I think what I recognize with the Republican Party is their very understanding of a day's work is a day's pay, you know, and it's that bootstraps mentality. But it's very difficult, you know, with the Democrats. One of the things that we really pushed for was you can't really push for a large minimum wage if you have unpaid interns. You know, it's all very connected. And so our report, when we published it, really got some people talking. It really got some individuals to say, you know what, it's the right thing to do. We do need to pay our interns and stuff. But the way that we wanted offices to understand the importance of paying interns was not just to give an individual paycheck, but rather to have them understand that it's about diversifying the pipeline. Because when you allow interns to come from all backgrounds, then you allow those individuals to then have access points to the entry levels on the Hill. Interns are staffers. And so if your interns are all just individuals from rich backgrounds, then your staffers into 1 or 2 years are not going to be as diverse. I mean, you can ask any staffer on the Hill. You've got to have an internship experience in order to get there.
And that's going to have an impact on the kind of policy you pursue and even the way your office responds to callers. Well, we want to talk more about that, but I also want to bring our listeners into the conversation. If anyone listening today has ever worked as an intern in politics or a campaign, paid or unpaid, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. Maybe you are a teacher or have worked in some other role in politics. What are interns getting out of this? Did the presence or absence of a paycheck make a difference? We'd really want to hear from you. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. We'll talk more with Guillermo Creamer of the organization Pay Our Interns in a moment. You're listening to KCUR's Central Standard. But first, we want to bring in one of those interns. Brendan Davison is a student at William Jewell College, where he'll be a senior this fall. Hi, Brendan.
Hi.
Thanks for being on Central Standard today.
It's great to be here.
So you were an intern last year, not in Washington, but on the campaign of Brent Welder, who hoped to go to Washington.
Yes.
He was a candidate in the Democratic primary for Kansas's 3rd congressional district. Folks will recall that Sharice Davids ended up winning that primary and was elected in November. What did you do on Brent Welder's campaign?
I was what we called a field intern, so I mostly did field work, knocking doors, calling voters, recruiting volunteers, helping with outreach to voters and volunteers and coordination of those efforts, and also assisting at events such as the rally that we did with Bernie and AOC.
So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, yes. Of course, yes, AOC. So you spent how many hours a week doing this?
Oh, God, it was it really varied. It was not quite a full-time job like a DC internship would have been. I worked pretty similar hours to an average part-time job, 25 hours a week probably on average.
But that is like a part-time job. That's exactly, a pretty significant amount of your hours.
Yeah, and I worked a part-time job in addition to it. So,
and you had to do that because you weren't paid.
Yeah, it really... I was not motivated by money or even just the experience. I genuinely believed in what the campaign stood for, and I still do believe in that. And I was very proud of what we ultimately were able to do. But, you know, I did have the financial constraints because I was not being paid, so I had to find a part-time job as well, and that created another set of difficulties of its own, trying to find the scheduling and balance that.
All political campaigns are fueled by volunteers, and you were a volunteer. How is an internship different than just being one of the many, many campaign volunteers?
We would sometimes joke on the campaign that the difference between an intern and volunteer is that an intern is paid less, although that was very facetious. Really, the differences were we had a very specific set of responsibilities. Some of us worked on finance. Some of us worked in the field. We had much more restrictions on what we could say on our to the press. We were not allowed to talk to the press as I am now. And there were much more restrictions on some of the things we had to do there, just workplace restrictions and things of that nature.
Which sounds a lot like what they would ask of any staff member.
Exactly.
Except that you weren't being paid.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, you said that you were okay with that. You were committed to the cause. And yet, would your commitment to the cause have been any less if you had been paid?
I don't think it would have. I'm a progressive. I'm a left winger. I genuinely believed in what we were fighting for in that campaign. So my commitment would not have been really affected by it. But I do think that there is a very clear systemic problem with the fact that interns in many of these places are not being paid, the fact that that is not part of the political culture.
What's the systemic problem?
The fact that that really is more of a cultural problem, I should have said, that it's really internships are just about experience. As Guillermo talked about, that mentality really creates problems that really does exclude a lot of people. Our campaign staff was fairly diverse, but the interns were less so. We were largely in our 20s, college students, mostly white men, largely from Johnson County. So...
Which gave you, you're saying, sort of the privilege, the opportunity to do something like this that maybe others could not have.
Exactly.
You know, I have to say, I'm wondering, okay, you weren't paid in money, but were you paid in some other things? So like a lot of unpaid interns on Capitol Hill would have said in the past that they were getting paid by the proximity to power, or by the chance to wander onto the floor of the House of Representatives after hours, or, seems like you got the chance to have screen doors slammed in your face in Lenexa. What did you get out of this if you weren't getting paid?
Well, I had plenty of screen doors slammed in my face across the 3rd District. But what I really got out of it, there's a strong sense of camaraderie that I had between me and the other interns and the staff and even the candidate himself that really can't be quantified in any other way. And just... it taught me a lot of amazing skills, showed me how a campaign works, taught me how political organizing really works when you get down to into it. And those were incredible experiences that I wouldn't, I wouldn't give up for anything.
You don't have any regrets about it?
Absolutely none.
Again, we do want to invite our listeners, if you have been an intern or have thought about it, or maybe you couldn't be an intern because you couldn't afford it, give us a call at 816-235-2888. Guillermo Creamer of Pay Our Interns is still with us. Guillermo, how typical was Brendan's experience? I mean, aren't there real benefits to the unpaid internship done out of love for a cause?
There's no doubt that the experience, as I said before, is that launching point for your political aspirations, truthfully. And, it is important to know internships are an entry point to any level of the workforce, regardless of political, whether it's other industries as well. But, when we published our report, our title was pretty self-explanatory. Experience doesn't pay the bills. And that's a really big thing that I think I need to stress. the experience that an individual get is no doubt a great one. However, there still has to be someone who's paying the bills. And the reality is that the individuals who can afford to do it are normally offsetting the cost by either working one or two jobs, or they have family to do it. And so, you know, it's really difficult for an individual to say, oh, well, you have to pay your dues by being an unpaid intern. That's not right. You know, that's not something that's actually equitable in any way. You know, what's happening here is you're not allowing individuals from disadvantaged backgrounds a seat at the table. And so that's when, you know, it all becomes disproportional. And then at that point, you're looking at it, you're looking at the diversity that's there, and you're realizing there's actually a big lack of it. You know, and that's the problem here.
Yeah. So have you, since your work began and since the House, as you mentioned earlier, budgeted some money for interns to be paid, how long does it take to see that pay off in any sort of change in the composition of the intern corps in Washington?
You know, I would say we're starting to see change pretty rapidly. You know, one of the systemic change that we were able to see really quickly was with the DNC. The DNC started paying their interns. When Tom Perez was running for DNC chair, we actually approached all the DNC individuals running and said, would you pledge to pay your interns if you were elected? And I think all but one had agreed. And so finally, when Chairman Perez took over, you know, we worked with the DNC and they established an internship program. And after that program, they very warmly admitted that their diversity numbers went up, and they didn't go up by 1 or 2%. They went up by, you know, over 30%. And they really do believe that that was in direct relation to the fact that they now started paying their interns. You know, and we have a lot of offices that started paying their interns before the allocation. And they said the moment they started paying their interns, they saw more diverse applicants. Because the reality is I had some offices that said, you know, I picked the most diverse individuals from my pool. But the reality is that if I know I can't afford to be an unpaid intern, I'm not going to apply. Mm. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to make sure that that pool got bigger and that pool got more diverse. And it challenged offices to start looking at individuals they probably never even had access to before.
That's Guillermo Creamer Jr. He's the founder of one of the founders of Pay Our Interns, a 501c3 nonprofit organization in Washington, D.C. We're also joined here by Brendan Davison, a former intern on a campaign in Kansas. We're going to keep talking to them, but first we need to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation about political internships with a professor who sends dozens of students to Washington every year, some unpaid and more with a paycheck. How that's changing the learning experience and the lifestyle of interns. Stay tuned for that. Central Standard will be right back. KCUR Central Standard is back. I'm Brian Ellison in for Gina Kaufman, and we are right in the middle of a conversation about internships in congressional offices and state houses and campaigns and the growing trend toward paying these, usually young people, who used to do the work for free. Guillermo Creamer Jr. is still here. He's a former intern himself who founded a nonprofit to advocate for pay for interns. Brendan Davison is also here. He's a college student who interned on a congressional campaign last year, but joining us now is someone who has known a lot of college interns through the years, University of Kansas political science professor Burdette Loomis. Welcome back to KCUR.
Thanks, Brian.
It's good to talk to you, Bird. You coordinate KU's DC internship program. Tell us about that program. What do your students do when they take a semester and head to Washington?
Well, I think the key thing you just said was a semester. They take a full semester in the spring. Sometimes they do a summer, sometimes they do a fall, but almost all of the best ones are full semester internships, full time, 5 days a week. And so what we do is we encourage students to get their own internships. We help them, but they will send letters or emails, apply online to senators, House members, but also the State Department, C-SPAN. We had someone working at CNN this year, NPR. So it's not just congressional internships. There are internships all over Washington, D.C. They get a full semester credit for doing this. And I think that we encourage them, honestly, not as their first item of business, to consider whether the internship is paid or not.
Some of them are and some of them aren't.
Some of them are and some of them aren't. The trend now, I think that the congressional trend is clear now, with the legislation that there's money there. I think it's $1,800 stipend possibility, and you're going to see the House doing it. The Senate's been much better, and to their credit, Jerry Moran and Pat Roberts have paid their interns for quite a while, and so that's been a real plus. And I think, as your guests have noted, that Jerry Moran in particular has benefited from being known for paying interns. So, you know, I've written about this with my director, Gary Meltz, in D.C. We've done op-eds about paying interns. Guillermo's efforts are spectacular. And I think he hit it at the right time. And you saw when AOC came out and said, you know, we should pay the minimum wage, what a splash that made. So the trend line is there. Yeah. I want to emphasize on something a little else. Everyone else has been talking about careers.
Yeah.
And that's really important. But honestly, we consider internships as part of a liberal arts experience. And so...
So you're okay with students doing this who are just going to have this semester and learn something and then go become engineers or teachers or something?
We'd love that. We so encourage people from business schools or engineers or whatever to participate because they're learning about the policymaking process and their lives are going to be affected by government policies, you know, forever. So I think that the key thing here is you go to D.C. and maybe you find out you've had a great experience. Almost everyone has a terrific experience there, almost without exception. But a lot of them go and say, gee, I really enjoyed myself, but this is not what I want to do.
Hmm.
And we talk about getting a job. Let's be clear about that first job. Right now, it's about $22,000, $24,000, $26,000.
You're talking
a year.
About the legislative aides in Congress.
Legislative aide, a legislative correspondent, whatever. You want to talk about discouraging diversity. Again, you come back to Guillermo's point that these entry-level jobs discriminate just about as much as internships do because you can't live on D.C. for $25,000 a year.
Yeah, well, let me ask you, these students, how exactly, even for a semester, you know, it seems like it would be really hard without some additional financial support to make this work. I mean, I know there are students. I know that that's maybe a smaller budget in the first place, but still, D.C. is not a cheap place to live. You want to go out and have a meal once in a while?
Sure. So the basics are actually, it's a little cheaper in D.C. You're taking 12 credit hours, probably rather than 15. You are not paying for any books, and you're not paying any on-campus fees. The biggest single item is housing, which for us is about $3,000 for 3 months at a place that's good connections on the Red Line. We've had a good relationship with them for 20 years. But that's the biggest nut. And beyond that, you're absolutely right. You don't want to go there with no money and not be able to take advantage of all the opportunities in D.C. And certainly have a reasonable social life. Honestly, since you're getting 12 hours of credit for most of these kids, sometimes they don't do it for credit. They will have graduated and mm-hmm. will go. But there is a trade-off there. They'd be paying for the tuition, for room and board, for food in Lawrence. So it is more, but it's not nearly as much more as you might think.
So this, and that's in the context of students who are already, you know, enrolled as undergraduates.
Absolutely, yes.
Let me ask all of you. I mean, let's dig in. All of you have mentioned the question of diversity in terms of who can apply for internships like these and who can work in them. I want to dig in a little bit more to first of all, what we even mean by diversity. Who exactly is being excluded from participating in internships? We've mentioned already income levels, Guillermo, in terms of people who simply can't afford to do it. But what other diversity is being lost by these policies of not paying interns?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to really, you know, use actual race or class when it comes to stuff like this. I think something that's important to look at it in a really interesting way is to look at it by there's a lack of life of different life experiences at the table. You know, there's a lack of the farmer's son who can actually afford to send his child to Washington, or the lack of a family that raised their kids on food stamps that can afford to send their kids to Washington. I think that that's the really key thing that we forget, is that statement, sending someone to Washington, that is a multi-thousand dollar statement. That's not something that's like, you know, oh, it's just going to cost me the plane ticket, you know? And I think we're all in agreement here that the cost is just so, it's so vast. And so it's really important to get all life experiences at the table. It's not just about race or class, but life experiences in general.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, Brendan, your own experience in Johnson County, looking around at your fellow interns and seeing a bunch of, middle to upper class white dudes.
Yeah, it was largely white, although there was not entirely, and largely male, again, although not entirely. But most of the people did come from somewhere in Johnson County. We didn't have a lot of Wyandotte County people as
interns.
Even
though that's just as much a part of the district.
It absolutely was, and a lot of our campaign efforts were focused in Wyandotte County. I spent more time canvassing in Wyandotte County, for example, than in Johnson County.
I'm curious what possibilities there might be to address this. Obviously, paying interns is one way. Burdette Loomis at KU, I know that you also have some interns that come not just from the University of Kansas, but from other universities in Kansas, and some of them even help try to alleviate the costs of their students, right?
Yeah, and most notably, it's Wichita State, who has been our great partner for the last 15 years, and they'll usually send about five interns, and their student group is far different from the KU student group, which is far more white, more female these days, as a matter of fact, and of varying affluent levels. The Wichita State folks are, many of them live at home, some of them are non-traditional, and Wichita State, God bless them, 20 years ago made a conscious decision to fund their housing in D.C., which is the biggest single issue for anyone coming to D.C. for 3 months, or 4 months rather, for us. And so if they get accepted into their program, their housing is covered. And they've had former Governor Mark Parkinson has assisted in this. And I envy them. We have a decent endowment. We have some very generous alums, and since I've been doing it for 35 years, we're starting to get a return on that from people who've, you know, been interns and have valued the experience. But to me, that's been great for our program, and full marks to Wichita State for seeing this need and supporting them.
Let's expand this conversation. If you have ever worked an unpaid internship in any field other than politics, give us a call at 816-235-2888. We'd love to hear from you to sort of get a sense of what you think there might be worth doing for less pay, or whether being paid actually is important. 816-235-2888. And let me ask all of our guests, the topic of paid versus unpaid internships in other fields, although maybe we can explore that more fully in some other show, but that is a trend, paying interns, that's certainly happening in other fields too. And I should add, journalism is one of those. We, Casey, you are now pay our interns. Is there any reason politics should be any different from, say, a tech company or a newspaper or an architecture firm when it comes to interns, Guillermo?
No, I think the reality is that it shouldn't. You know, when you look at the tech industry and you look at the, you know, major corporation industry, they don't pay their interns out of the goodness of their heart. They recognize the worth that they get from these individuals. You know, so many of them are looking at, they're trying to find the next big thing. You know, they're trying to find the next big individual. And the reality is, the next big thing might not be living, you know, in Johnson County or in Silicon Valley, but rather in the Bronx, or, you know, in a farmland, you know, in middle America. And I think that that's really important. And I think that that's where these companies understand that, you know, if they want to bring these individuals out to them, you know, they they're making them the best offer. And I'm not saying that that's what we should be looking at with the political world, but for the political side of all of this, the way you should look at it is, well, let's make sure we've got someone who has this experience at the table, you know. And also, one of the things that truly was lacking in Washington was having individuals to intern for their own state or their own representative. You know, too often, especially in the fall and the spring, you've got members of Congress having individuals who attend the top five schools in Washington, you know, and they don't actually have students who are interning from their state school, from their HBCU, from their HSI. You know, I actually, in April, traveled to 8 different cities across the country, and I visited about 4 to 5 schools per city. And I'm talking about HBCUs, community colleges, and Hispanic-serving institutions.
HBCU, historically black colleges and universities.
Exactly. Yeah. And so when I went to those institutions, most of them did not know this funding existed. And so that's a severe problem. There's this disconnect between what's happening in Washington to the schools that really have these diverse populations.
I wonder also if there isn't a sort of a generational issue here, too, that I have heard some older generations say, you know, when I was younger, we had to put in our time. You know, you work your way up. You start working for free. Eventually you get paid a little, and sooner or later you work your way up to those real positions that pay more. Brendan, you're shaking your head.
My generation has a lot more financial burdens than a lot of those previous generations had. We have a much larger student debt burden. Rents are getting higher. Housing is becoming less affordable. So we have a lot more financial stress on us than maybe those past generations had. So these unpaid internships, especially in DC, are just not options because of these financial barriers that we have. Just as a generational issue, and when you factor in class and race, it just becomes even worse.
816. Go ahead, Guillermo.
I want to echo that a little bit. You know, I think it's important for previous generations to recognize times have changed. You know, the working your way through college is not a thing anymore. You know, it is difficult as it is for an individual to go off to university or to go off to college, and they have to take out these mass amount of loans. You know, and so if you recognize that, that's the first step. And so, you know, I agree.
Burdette Loomis, I don't want to say I'm asking you to speak for previous generations, but
previous generation.
How do you respond to that?
Oh, no, I think they're dead on. And one of the things that prevents students from going to D.C. Is that they often have 20-hour-a-week jobs
here
that they depend on for spending money for other things. And one of our requirements in D.C., since it's a full – we have full-time interns, we learned the hard way several years ago that they cannot work in D.C.
Yeah.
Because that will wreck their internship. Now, I'm not talking about a part-time internship. I'm talking about a full 40-hour, 50-hour-a-week internship, and you can't do it. And so this makes us all the more cognizant of the importance of that financial aid from our end, and then from really lobbying, as Guillermo has and others, to get political offices to pay. One final thing: in Kansas, the state legislature looked at this 10 years ago and decided they would provide a $600 stipend for every intern who came and did at least 10 sessions in the state legislature. Huh. And so you can be a regular student at KU, but have a full spring internship with the Kansas legislature. And, you know, again, full marks to the Kansas legislature for institutionalizing that.
816-235-2888 is the number. If you have questions or comments about political internships, paid and unpaid, let's talk to Chris in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing great.
I'm based in Kansas City, and I run a internship program for college graduates. We actually try and stay away from the term internship and use the word fellowship. We feel like that communicates a little bit more substance to the work that we're helping our graduates find. So we help them find paid jobs after they graduate from school, bring them to Kansas City. They work 4 days a week, and on the fifth day of the week, we teach them courses about how to integrate their ethics and worldview into their work. And I'll be honest, you know, we're essentially telling college graduates, we'll help you find a job with a growing, vibrant company in Kansas City paying $18 to $20 an hour. Does not get rich money, but annualize, it's about $40,000 a year. And we still have a hard time recruiting a full class of fellows every year. I think a lot of reasons why is college graduates, they even look at what we can get them paid at 18 to 20, and they think, given student loans, given what they've been told they have to make out of college to be successful and move up the ladder, they think that is sacrificing starting their career to get ahead. Absolutely huge hurdles for anyone, you know, if we're trying to have a program that has racial diversity and socioeconomic diversity, and from our limited understanding, I think people who come from different ethnic backgrounds or racial backgrounds and socioeconomic backgrounds, it's even more of a hurdle for them to think about making just a little bit less starting out their career because of some of the obligations that they might have, given college debt or helping support their families. There's just so many hurdles.
I appreciate that, Chris, and thank you so much for sharing a little of your experience. You know, I guess I'm curious from our guests. Chris said some of the things that you had mentioned earlier about the diversity that is enabled by offering the pay, but he said there's also some difficulty in recruiting people to even to low paying tasks, even as opposed to just unpaid. Even these low paying internships or fellowships are still hard to get people to take. Guillermo.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say two things to that. You know, one of the things that I want to you know, kind of echo is the fact that he's right. You know, there is this issue with diversity and inclusion and recruiting individuals to low paying things. I think one of the things that has happened in society is we have the word internship has really become this gray area. You know, it's become so close to volunteers and away from fellowships, because I recognize that, you know, how fellowships has a little bit more prestige behind it and most of the time comes with some type of a compensation. I think what's important to do is to differentiate volunteers and interns. Those are two very different things. But I think the other thing too is the fact that, you know, you have to recognize that if you're not paying individuals while they're in college, you get all these recent college grads that are looking for internship opportunities. Right. And so those who could afford it to do it while they were in college already have a leg up. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the argument that we're having here as to why you need to pay your interns, because we're hoping that 5 to 10 years from now, we see a lesser amount of recent college grads looking at internship programs and actually looking at entry-level jobs. You know, I think that that's what's going on here, and that's part of something we're working towards.
Will there ever come a time where a place like Washington, D.C. functions, you know, without this, this second class of employees, even who are paid sort of less than the others and are treated as you're here to learn, not just like other staff?
The short answer to that, I think, is probably no. Right. You know, if you look at the Congress, one reason we're in a crunch right now is the Congress refused over the last 20, 25 years to increase budgets for staff, and particularly for committee staff. And so they've not been willing to fund their own operation, and that has cost the Congress greatly. So the good news for interns, they often get really good intern experiences, but then they turning that into a actual job, again at $25,000 a year on Capitol Hill, is highly problematic. If you have asked members of Congress, are they going to give themselves boatloads more of money for their own offices? The answer is probably no.
Guillermo, I want to ask you about some of the newest frontier in your work with Pay Our Interns. You've actually been talking with some of the presidential campaigns out there about their experience and maybe whether Brendan's experience of being an unpaid intern on a campaign is something that they need to be replicating.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we recognize is we live in this world of social media and memoirs and all that. And, you know, all these candidates have shared their past experiences. And you have individuals like Senator Harris and Mayor Buttigieg who start their memoirs out by talking about their internship experience and how that shaped where they are today. You know, and so when you have these individuals who are seeking the highest office in the land, it's so important to recognize, okay, like, this is exactly what we're talking about. You know, these internships really do create the career path for some individuals. And even in the new Congress, you know, you look at Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley from Massachusetts. She is now holding the seat where she interned. You know, that's an amazing experience. That's an amazing story within itself. And that is, it's not a unique story. It's actually something that happens in many companies. You know, you've got the former Boeing CEO. He was a former intern at Boeing. You have all of these interns that have success stories.
And so is it having an impact? Are there presidential campaigns that are going to be paying their interns now as they're getting underway in a way that they wouldn't have 4 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at job boards, you know, for the first time, I want to say in 2016, Bernie Sanders was the only presidential candidate who was paying his interns. And now you've got eight different individuals who have said that they're going to pay their interns or are already offering paid internship programs. And that is astronomical. I mean, that's unheard of. And it's something that we should be proud of, you know, because it's understanding that they want to make sure everyone has a seat at the table and everyone can take advantage of these opportunities. So it's really nice to see.
Brandon, you'll be a senior next year. I'm curious, having had a little bit of an internship with a campaign, what are your plans after college?
I'd like to continue political organizing and find a career in that, either in political or labor organizing, something like that. I'd like to take the skills that I learned on this internship and apply them to help further a cause that I do genuinely believe in. I am a very ideologically driven person, so I would like to make my life about that, so to speak. But, you know, I first do need to find some more experiences and hopefully paid experiences in the interim.
I mean, will having done an internship in the long run change your thinking about your career or life choices?
Yes, it absolutely has. It already has. It's made me think a lot more about the importance of organizing, the importance of grassroots outreach and things like that, that we really focused on our campaign. And that was something that has really affected the way I think, the way I believe that we should go about doing politics.
I also want to ask you, Burdette Loomis, you know, can you think of a student or two who've had a particular experience that has really profoundly, you know, changed the direction they choose to go with their life?
Absolutely. There are literally dozens and dozens, but I'll bring one close to home. The current Kansas Secretary of Commerce, David Toland, was an intern in the mid-1990s in D.C., stayed in D.C., worked in D.C. municipal government, was really a rising star. And then in his mid-30s, decided he'd come back to the Independence area and start a nonprofit that would try to do economic development in that area, in rural, small-town Kansas. Was quite successful at it. And now he's the Secretary of Commerce, probably around age 42, 43, and clearly a rising star in Kansas politics. And what was fascinating there is he took the D.C. experience and then was very successful, but then brought it back to Kansas.
That's excellent. You know, we need to take a break. Let me ask our guests. I'm going to ask you live on the air. Can you stay with us through the end of the hour? This is a great conversation.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Sure.
Yeah, you're all good. Sticking around. Wonderful. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue to talk about political internships and the impact that they can actually have on people's lives, the career choices they make, and why being paid can still really make a difference. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman, and this is KCUR Central Standard. We're talking about political internships. Once the unpaid masses did most of the work, well, maybe not most of the work, but a lot of the work in Washington, D.C. today, often those jobs come with a paycheck. How is it changing the world of political internships, and how should it? I'm speaking with Guillermo Creamer Jr. He is the founder of Pay Our Interns, a former intern himself. Brendan Davison, a college student at William Jewell, who was part of the Welder campaign in Kansas last year. And Burdette Loomis, KU's political science professor and director of their D.C. internship program. Let's take a call from Murad in Independence. Hello, Murad.
Hey, good morning. excellent show, and I love Central Standard. I really like that you're giving this information out to the public, and it shows signs of growth for us as a species. So we know in the past, people of wealth could dictate what happened, and they used people to do work, their skills, their talents, and they weren't paid for it. This is a sign of our growth, that we opened this up, because when you use a person's time, that time is valuable, and to not be paid to do what you do is simply something of the past.
Murad, I appreciate your perspective. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Guillermo Creamer, do you agree with Murad? Is this a sign of growth? He's sort of framing it as just a matter of sort of justice and human decency.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely one way to look at it. Definitely a positive way to look at it. You know, we as a society really have shifted the way that we see this. You know, we really are looking with the fact that it's about equity, and it's about making sure that individuals are have a seat at the table. You know, it's not, you know, one of the things that I have heard, to be honest, is this is just another thing millennials are whining about, you know, and that, you know, they're just trying to get paid. And that's not it. You know, it really is about ensuring that we have everyone at the table here, because like I said before, it's not just about race. It's not just about class. It's about life experiences and the diversity that has within itself.
You know, Burdette Loomis, you alluded to the Kansas legislature's recent actions to try to create some pay for interns. Let me ask you as well as Guillermo, how big a deal is this at the state level? I covered the Missouri General Assembly and know that interns, it's an important thing to get an internship there, and they spend a lot of hours.
Absolutely. It's not a full-time job for us. Although a couple kids do make it a full-time internship over the spring. But I think that it does address some of the cost issues. I mean, they're really taking courses as part of their regular academic program. If you're in Kansas, you go Tuesdays and Thursdays all day. Those are the days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, is the days that the legislature really works. So you get two of the three full work days. Legislators have become very good at giving serious tasks to students. So you know, I'm a big fan of this. I think if you have a university that's close to a state capital, and we work with several other universities like Oklahoma and Nebraska that do have these programs, it's a great opportunity. I don't want to say one other thing here, and I just back up this notion of there's a kind of a moral obligation here to pay interns, and beyond the all the technical reasons or financial, that they're really that kind of equity. Mm-hmm. I think Murad was getting at that. And the final thing is, boy, you pay an intern, and then it is a job. And it's, you know, there's more obligation there. And I think it's a better experience.
Guillermo, I asked you, your work is expanding the state levels very quickly?
Yeah, we are. We're looking at taking our success from the federal level and aiming it at different states across the country.
Well, I appreciate all that all of you are doing and all that you have spent time talking about with us this hour. Burdette Loomis from KU, Brendan Davison, a student at William Jewell, and Guillermo Creamer of Pay Our Interns. Thanks to all of you for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you missed any part of today's conversation, you can hear it again at kcur.org/centralstandard. In fact, why not subscribe to our show as a podcast and get all the shows? kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, Gina Kaufman is back as we ask, why don't we fix things anymore? That's tomorrow at 10. This show is produced by Melody Rowell, Chris Young, Suzanne Hogan, and Salisa Kalakal. Our intern is Riley Kester. Silvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for letting me spend time with you this week. Now stay tuned for Up to Date.